This is for the players.
I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Josh Saunders.
And this is for the players, the Pop Culture's PlayStation podcast. Almost 40 years of playing PlayStation and 6-plus-ish years in the games media combined. We thought we'd throw our hat into the ring and join that PlayStation conversation.
If you would also like to join the PlayStation conversation, you can do so every Monday morning, 9 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time on YouTube, iTunes, and other podcast services. How do you join that conversation? Simply head over to www.thepopcultures.com/questions. Give us your questions, thoughts, and suggestions for the show. If a week between shows is a little bit too long, please join us on Facebook, join us on Discord, and if you're feeling good, join us on Patreon. Check out the tiers there. There might be something there that interests you.
Don't forget, the Pop Cultures website, popcultures.com, is up and running, everything you'll need in one location.
And also, if you are only here because of our clickbaity titles and you want to just hear about that, timestamps are now in the video description, separating all the stuff you maybe don't want to hear so you can skip straight to stuff you do want to hear, because an hour show is quite long.
How you doing, man?
Good, man.
Got smad sweats on. It's a hot day here.
Stink.
And we were like, yeah, let's jam some Rock Band for a while. So we got all like gnarly sweaty.
Oh, you more than me. The drums are a little bit more intense.
Well, like, I'm sweaty to begin with, and then like add the physical exertion as well.
Yeah, you showed me your sweet old school guitar.
Yeah, it's like 1962 Matten, maybe?
It's fucking awesome. I want to buy it and get it restored so bad. It looks so good.
It's pretty dope.
But guitar's not all I've been playing.
No, what else have you been playing this week?
Segway! Hey! You want to take that high five back, because I've put the majority of my time this last week into the World of Warcraft.
Oh, I'm aware of that.
Well, I got a new computer, so I thought I'll get back into it.
But something that isn't even that like demanding.
Yeah, no, well, I can still max it out and it won't run. Like, they've added a lot over the years terms of anti-aliasing and all this other shit I don't understand. It's cool. It's, you know, I'm enjoying it, because it, WoW gives me time to also like watch movies on my laptop and, you know, just kind of zone out. So I gave my old computer to my son, put it in his room, set him up a WoW trial account. We've been playing a bit of WoW together, like blowing his mind, because I'm like, you know, we started as Blood Elves, you know, right up the top of the map. And I'm like, push M, opens his map. He's like, so this is where we are, yeah? This is the zone we're in.
Press M again.
Right click, zones out to the Eastern Kalimdor, the Eastern Kingdoms. And he's like, you see his mind, like, holy shit. I'm like, click it again. And there's Kalimdor, exactly the same size, the other side of the map. I'm like, click it again. And then there's like Northrend and the Broke. And he's just like, you know, it reminded me of the first time I opened the game up. Yeah, the first ever MMO, and you see how big the world actually is. And you're like, holy shit. I've been playing Doom on Switch as well. I'm going to talk about more about that on a video upcoming on Wednesday. Quick thoughts are, it's cool. And a few criticisms. But it is amazing that a game like Doom is running, you know, you can play it in your hands. So that's pretty sweet too. Me.
I've been all over the shop this week, actually. I played a little bit more Call of Duty again, as always, because it's damn good fun.
Yeah.
Thanks to Bethesda, I've played Skyrim twice this week. So we should mention, of course, thanks to Bethesda, the Australian Bethesda team, for sending us not just Doom, not just Skyrim VR, but also Skyrim on the Switch as
well. I know, it's been crazy. Bethesda have been super good.
They've been fantastic this week. So big thanks to them, and big thanks to Ethan from Technology and Gaming for opening the doors for us.
And not just those games, but obviously Wolfenstein 2.
Yeah,
as well.
Wolfenstein 2. Like, yeah, as I said, like, so we're going to do so much, but Ethan was like, Scars were right.
Yeah,
and then we've got to like back it
got,
up.
Got like a seal of approval. Yeah, yeah, so on Wednesday there will be a video, a combined video on our thoughts on Doom Switch and Skyrim Switch.
I'm going to call the Bethesda Bundle. I'll think of a better name later.
Demons and Dragons.
Demons, ooh, I like that too.
But I know you also streamed a bit of Skyrim VR last
I did.
Last
so we'll talk about Skyrim on the Switch. It's Skyrim.
On the Switch.
On the Switch. And like, it's everything that's great about Skyrim, but it's portable, something that we've always dreamt about.
Does it come bundled with all the DLCs and stuff?
Yes.
That's cool.
So it comes bundled with all three DLCs, like Hearthfire, Dawnguard, and the other one. Dragonstone? Dragonborn. I don't know.
I can picture like where you go with it, because I've done it.
So it comes with all three. It runs at a pretty much locked 30. I've never had it dip on me in my time. We'll obviously dump into it more when it comes to the actual review. But one thing that I really like is that it's actually running the assets and the world of the special edition from last year.
Oh, so the remastered.
All the remastered, all the additional foliage. So,
because the initial, like, when they first announced it, it was like, oh, it'll be the base PS3 version. It'll suck.
Like, don't get me wrong. Like, it's not running that well. Like, as in terms of well. It's running at 720 in portable. See, our rule was that we're only playing him in portable. It's sort of the point. If you want to play a docked, we play it on the consoles.
Well, yeah, goes for Doom 2, yeah. If you're going to play them on your big TV, you're better off just playing one. Yeah. That's not the appeal.
Yeah, for us, this was the appeal of playing it portable. Yeah. So it's running at 720, so it's allowing it to have that dense-ish world, but just run smoother because it's a lower res. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've had no real major problems. Yeah, played Skyrim VR,
yeah,
which is on the PlayStation VR.
Took you a while to get that stream running, I saw.
It took me three attempts.
At one point, I went to our YouTube page as you were trying to get it set up, and there's like 2 30-second streams and then the actual stream.
Yes.
And the first word you hear on the actual stream that's now on our YouTube channel is fuck.
Yeah, because it took the internal streaming of the PlayStation is not that crash hot.
Yeah.
See, for me, because I was like, well, I didn't want to bring it in here. I was too lazy to set it all up. Like, that's going to negate the whole point of what I'm trying to do here. So I played it in the lounge room. I just had everything running through the headset, had the mic through the headset pickup, my talking, and the comments would come up in the box. So as I'm playing, we go bing, we come up on the bottom of the VR screen.
Oh, that's sweet as. Is that a new thing?
Yeah, it is new, yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
So it doesn't give a lot. So if someone put a long sentence in, I get about 3/4 of the sentence.
Right, okay.
And I just kind of made up the rest.
It's better than nothing, though.
And I'm a little bit sick as well, so heads up.
What else is new for this show? Yeah. There's always something. Lost your voice, you're feeling shit.
It's because I don't sleep.
Can't be fucked.
Yeah. Just everything, you know, like this. I'm almost a year in, so it's like, my body's just starting to give up.
Yeah, but you're also getting to that point where it starts getting better.
It's going
to
start getting easier. Yeah, yeah.
The older they get, the easier it gets until they, like, from 0 to 18 months, it's fucking all over the shop. From, like, 2 to prep, it's better. And then they start school, it starts to dip again because then they start getting all that big social interactions and they can, you know, some kids get anxiety. You know, my son got anxiety when he started going to school and stuff, so it kind of dips again.
Mm-hmm.
And then it hits, like, my daughter's now 13 and if I don't go into her room during the day, I'd never see her because she's just doing her own thing. And I don't, you know, I did the same thing, so, you know, whatever. It'll get better. That's what
I'm saying. So, like, where was it going with question? Oh yeah, so it really wasn't that easy to set up the stream, which was really frustrating. But we had a good turnout. A lot of people asking a lot of good questions. I was playing with the Move controllers.
Yep. Because there was a point where all the demos were that teleporty garbage, and they're like, no, well, you know, you can play with DualShock 2, that's cool. But then they added in this new movement scheme for the Move controllers. How does that go?
Yeah, so there's essentially three ways to play. There's the first, which is the teleportation, which I find more jarring. It makes me want to be more ill because you're jumping and it's very abrupt. Then there's, on the other end, there's the DualShock, and there's something in the middle. So it's what's called free movement. So with the left Move controller, you press the thumb button, and then you, by tilting the controller forward and back, you coast in the direction that you want to.
Yep.
So that becomes your analog stick.
Yep.
And then, using the square and X, sorry, the circle and X. So you know, it's the thumb button and the four button. Yep. Use the bottom two, and that's your pivot.
Sounds like it takes a bit of getting used to, but once you do it, it should be pretty sweet.
Yeah, I had to turn the speed down a little bit. Yep. So if I was like going, so I had to bring the speed down a little bit, ease my way up, and then slowly jump the speed back up as I'm sort of working on it.
Yep.
I had no issues, like no motion sickness, nothing.
Sweet, that's good.
Because when you start moving, it gives a little bit of fisheye effect, which kind of locks your vision, so it kind of makes it less vomit inducing. Where, like, our buddy Charlie from Load Screen actually was physically ill.
Oh, wow.
It's very interesting.
Did you get up to fighting the first dragon?
Yeah, that's where I ended it.
Did you do it, though?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. That's nice.
So there's a couple of cool things that make the VR better. the immersion is one. The scale of everything is fantastic. Yeah. So when you first see Alduin and you're getting your head blocked, chopped off, you look up and it's huge.
Yeah.
And when you're running through burnt up Helgen and then he lands on the wall and his wing gets in front of you, it's huge. Yeah,
that's wicked.
Yeah, and then once you get out of the world and you see the world and it's so cool.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think about one of the VR centric stuff. So it is predominantly the same game. Like outside of the Resident Evil, this is by far the most fully fledged VR game.
Well, arguably more so, you know, because Resident Evil 7 is quite, you know, a linear in a very small space, and Skyrim opens it up to that massive world.
Like, this is literally what people imagine VR would be. It'd be like, here's a giant world fuck around.
I could see myself if I had it, you know, not streaming it or anything, just playing by yourself, and I'm just kind of losing yourself.
I lost
and
track
losing
of time.
Track of time.
I streamed for about 2 and a bit hours last night. It felt I couldn't tell you how long I'd been in the world.
Yeah. That's awesome. It's actually kind of scary, really.
It is really scary.
Seeing, you know, where VR could go.
But there's some cool things. It's like, so I'm trying, trying to think of VR specific stuff. So you now have two hands, obviously. So when you use magic, you can choose the directions rather than just having it in front of you.
Oh, that's cool.
So you can literally like electrocute one guy while flame another guy over there, and that feels boss.
Can you do that with weapons as well?
Yeah. Like
hold up a shield over here.
I've got one dude back and I've got one dude on fire over there, you know, getting him out of my face while I'm knifing a spider over here.
That's weird.
Same goes. Like you have your shield and you can block one and you can stab one and you can block under the shield. And
The
sword feels cool. It feels intuitive. There's a nice sound response to know when when it's triggering a hit. So he goes, hua, hua, hua. So if you just do that, it goes, hua.
Okay.
Which means you can flail all you want. It's not going to always register as a hit.
You still got that like every a hit per second.
Yeah, so you've still got to do the... So if you were to go for like an actual sword, it would register every one of those hits because your timing. If you just flail around, it's not going to register everything because you'll just instantly mash everything.
Yep.
But the shield is so cool. Mm.
Make you feel like a boss?
It does, because the second I got the sword, I was like, this is pretty cool. And then I got the shield and I was like... And then I confront one of the Stormcloaks with a warhammer, and I'm like, "Bong!"
That's cool.
Feels good. And then bow and arrow.
Yep.
Same thing. One hand's the bow. You're like, so the other one is the arrow, and you literally put it in, lock it in.
In all the VR games I've played with the bow and arrow, it's always been kind of shit.
Yeah.
Like it's always been like you pull an arrow in and you're like, the hand's shaking for whatever reason, and it's
Have your shake, don't get me wrong, but you don't have to pull out it from a quiver or anything.
Okay.
It just shoots refills in your hand, and then the only catch is you have to lock it. You have to nook it, as they call it. So you gotta then the game understands that you've put it in and it'll hold it in there unless you do that. Like if you move your hand away completely, it goes, oh, okay, cool. But it's relatively smart and keeps it in, and then you just pull back and launch it. It's semi-accurate. It's as accurate as you can be. It feels really rewarding, though. It's also incredibly scary because when you're playing normally, if you're playing with a bow and arrow and someone charges you, you're like, whatever, just change to a sword. Where this, you know, the opening sequence where you're going through...
The cave,
and there's a fucking bear.
Yeah.
I'm like, what up, bear?
It takes off this much of its health.
What the? And the bear charges me, man.
Yeah.
I'm like...
The archery in Skyrim was always kind of difficult until you got your sneak up and you got all the perks where you can take out a whole camp without being seen and just like one shot. Like that. That's my favorite Skyrim experience, is when you get to that level where you can just annihilate everything in a camp without being seen. Like, because... You know, being an archer is hard when you got cunts. When you got bad guys running at you, and you know you're kind of panicking and shit. Yeah. but when you get to those levels where you can just do whatever you want, that's sweet.
It is funny. I thought it was going to be a gimmick.
Mm.
I thought it would really wouldn't change how you play that much. Completely changed how I play. Mm. So, because when I normally play brute, just fucking run in with a sword and just mess things up, burn what I can, and then bounce.
Yeah.
Where now, because I'm in it, it's like, all right, cool. So rather...
You don't feel as invincible?
I don't feel as invincible. And using a lot more magic than I normally would, because it's great range attack, because when people get up in your shit, it's intense.
Mm.
So I'm using a lot more of that. I'm doing a lot more sneaking with the bow and arrow where possible. Like, you don't have to physically crouch. You hold the jump button and it's going to bring
you... got to get into it, though.
Yeah? Oh, I did. I totally did. I snuck down.
End up doing like 100 squats.
I did it and I was like, oh, my thighs. So I gave up. But yeah, like it's genuinely changed how I played. And even playing it on the Switch and all the other thousands of versions that I have Skyrim on, I feel compelled to play it more in VR.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I don't think... However I play it now will only be in VR.
Yeah.
If I can. It's tough with a child and stuff, but...
Yeah, but, you know, playing it on all these different consoles is one thing, but it's a different experience altogether. And it's good that there's something now to really let you invest your time in the VR.
If you want to sell VR to someone about what its capabilities can be, it's Skyrim VR. Mm. Like, granted, it is a 6-year-old game. It turned six, like, what? last week. Yeah, like the 11th to the 11th, 20 whatever. 2011, that was the point. 11-11-11.
But props to Bethesda for being able to keep it relevant for that long.
Yeah, and one, keeping it relevant that long, and two, because it is so old, without, you know, like it's not as demanding as new age games, so it's a lot easier to have it running on, say, the Switch. Have it still a feat, but it's easy to have it running, and like to change, you essentially change how you play. Like it's not the same game anymore.
Plus, it just credits how good the game actually is to still be this relevant. Because, you know, if no one wanted it, if no one was buying all these remasters and on the new systems and all that, then Bethesda would have gone, well, we're not doing it anymore. But it goes to show the power of this game. It makes me even more excited for the next installment in Elder Scrolls.
Come the 1st of December, we're going to get Doom VR. And that work plays with the aim controller. Yes.
That sounds like fun.
Oh, yeah. Then, I believe early next year, we get...
What? Fallout VR.
Fallout 4 VR.
Yeah. Cool.
Oh, and I've also been playing Pokemon Ultra Moon.
Oh, I forgot we got that. That's cool. But we'll talk about that another time, because that's... We've talked enough.
Yeah. Damn. Skyrim VR is fantastic. Literally fantastic.
As we move into the segment we call Informed Players.
Sometimes we tell you about other things that happened this week.
All the news that's happened this week in the industry. We have seven bits of news this week. It's been a relatively quiet week for news this week. There's obviously one big one that stands out, but we'll get to that last because reasons. We want you to stick around, that's why. Number one, in anticipation for the PSX 2017, Sony has announced the lineup of exhibitors and playable titles that will be at next month's big fan event. More than 80 developers will be at PSX 2017, including Atlus, Capcom, Double Fine Productions, Media Molecule, Insomniac, Supermassive, Naughty Dog, and Quantic Dream. Additionally, over 100 playable PS4 and PSVR titles will be at the event, including Shadow of the Colossus, Detroit Become Human, Guacamelee 2, Far Cry 5, and the recently delayed VR horror game, The Inpatient. While Sucker Punch isn't included in the lineup of exhibitors, it was confirmed earlier this month that the developer will share new information about Ghosts of Tsushima at PSX. Additionally, Media Molecule will provide new info about Dreams. There's also an event in Sydney called Playfest.
Yeah, so Playfest is almost like a small Australian PSX. Like, there's no big presentation or anything. It's this nice little hands-on with a bunch of games. It's November 22nd, I believe.
Actually, I've got the details here.
Yeah, read that out. Read the status out.
This is a status from PlayStation Australia. I'll plug this as well. Win! We have 20 double passes for an exclusive PlayStation event in Sydney on November 22nd to give away. Get hands-on with PS4 exclusive titles before they release, including Detroit Become Human and Shadow of the Colossus. And then you've got the reinstater. Friday, November 17th is when the competition closes. So head over to PlayStation Australia's Facebook page if you wish to try your luck with that.
If it wasn't like this weekend and I was smarter, I would have been like, hey man, it's in Sydney. Right?
Yeah, it's in Sydney. Always makes
sense. And the problem is, like, you know, like there's a bunch of really cool stuff there. Like, obviously, Detroit, but we've played. I'm pretty sure it's the same demo. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, like, Shadow of the Colossus would be interesting.
It must be interesting. Guacamelee 2 is a big deal. And, you know, Inpatient got delayed, which I'll talk about more in a different news topic
shortly.
I'll just
go straight to that after this.
Yeah, yeah, that'll be fun to play, too. And also, a reminder, we will be doing a Pop Seed Live Reacts to PSX. We'll be live streaming on Saturday the... What day was it again?
9th?
Saturday the 9th at 3 p.m. We'll be doing a bit of a pre-show, and then the post-show will be the official recording of For the Players. We'll be doing that live, so you can jump in the Twitch chat or the YouTube live chat and be a part of
the show. So apparently the PSX briefing is not like a E3 level of huge. Apparently it's pretty mellow.
Yeah.
So we may not be a lot to talk about, but we're going to have fun and chat with all of you anyway.
Beers as well. Next news topic, talking about The Inpatient. The Inpatient, the upcoming PSVR horror title from Supermassive Games, has been delayed to 2018. In a post on its official website, the developer announced The Inpatient is now set to release for PSVR on January 23rd in the US and January 24th in Europe. Psychological horror game set in the Until Dawn universe was originally slated to release on November 21st. Supermassive Games also announced Bravo Team, its upcoming cover-based PSVR shooter, has been delayed to 2018 and will now be released on March 6th in the US and March 7th in Europe. Bravo Team was meant to launch on December 5th.
So The Inpatient played fine.
Yeah, because we played it at... Wait.
Yeah, I played it at...
EB or PAX?
EB.
That's EB
Expo. I spent some time with The Inpatient, which was good. Yep. Bravo Team was there, playable as well. Looked janky as hell, so I had no interest in it. It's nice to use the aim controller, but it didn't seem to be running too well. So
strange that both their games have been delayed at once. You know, what's going on over there? Or
padding of time, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. because they would have been really good pre-Christmas titles to get out. But that's a shame. I titled that news Impatient for Inpatient. But, you know, it will come out and it will be fucking rad.
Yeah. Keen.
This is something I didn't know was happening. So I'll read the news story and we'll talk about it. Number three, Vivendi has ruled out a hostile takeover of Ubisoft for the next 6 months after the release of third quarter earnings reports. Reuters? Yeah, not like sex Reuters. that Vivendi has made the decision due to its third quarter earnings before interest, tax and amortization came in at 293 million euros rather than projected 324 million euros. Ubisoft, on the other hand, is up 96% since January and has beaten sales targets for a record high for the company. So you mentioned that this has been going on for a while. Vivendi have been trying to take over Ubisoft.
Yeah, bit by bit, Vivendi have been buying shares.
Is it a shares thing?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so they've been trying to buy as many shares as they possibly can so then they can eventually do a hostile takeover.
Because Ubisoft, in a continuation of that article, it mentioned they were trying to buy their shares back.
Yeah.
You know, to get out of that position. So Vivendi suffered profit loss and have backed out for a while.
Yeah, so it's pretty brutal.
What's their end game? Like,
just own it.
Just own it. Yeah. That sucks. Yeah. It sucks that we, you know, we're in this. I know shares and all that are a thing, but it's like Ubisoft can't just be like, fuck off. No. Mm. You know, it's all the, you know, majority of shareholders and all that kind of stuff. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I feel like, because, you know, this year's been a great year for Ubisoft and they've got a lot coming out as well. And I feel like it would be super detrimental for them to get bought out by Vivendi. We don't know how much Vivendi actually want to be involved in what Ubisoft do, should they be able to buy them. But I just don't see reason for it.
Well, yeah, so I can't remember what Vivendi do as a company, but...
Well, they used to own Blizzard until Activision bought them out.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, there's a fun fact for you, I guess.
Yeah, so I'm not quite. So I think it's really known what their intentions are because it's not been publicly disclosed, other than to have a hostile takeover.
I'm just picturing like this scenario in a video game, like Vivendi just coming at Ubisoft and Ubisoft have the shield up. They're like, "Nah, get back!" Vivendi like morph into like next form to try to come in again.
If you're blocking with the shield in Skyrim and you get shot with an arrow, the arrows lodge in your shield.
Oh, really?
And you can take them out.
Oh, really? That's cool.
You go bing, take that arrow. Take that out. You can't cut them off with a sword though. That'd be really cool if we'd let you do that. But
just the wording of it makes me feel bad for Ubisoft. Like, Vivendi has ruled out a hostile takeover. It's like, what are the Ubisoft guys going through? You picture like this war scene and like defending their rights to their company.
Yeah, the hostile is the graphic word there, isn't it?
Yeah. But no, props to Ubisoft for having a good year. Possible fuck you to Vivendi, depending what their intentions are. So, you know, good riddance. Number four, Disney and Marvel are shutting down free-to-play action RPG Marvel Heroes. In part with this decision, Disney has ended its relationship with Marvel Heroes publisher Gazillion Entertainment.
Gazillion. What a name.
According to a statement IGN received from Marvel Entertainment, quote, "We regret to inform our Marvel Heroes fans that we have ended our relationship with Gazillion Entertainment and that the Marvel Heroes game will be shut down. We would sincerely like to thank the players who joined the Marvel Heroes community and will provide any further updates as they become available." As noted by Kotaku, some signs of trouble at Gazillion arose when the developer missed several weekly community updates. So I played this for a bit. It was alright. It was, you know, free to play game. You know, it's what's to be expected. But it didn't mention whether they're keeping the servers running or not. Now, if they're shutting down the servers, that fucking sucks because there are a lot of people who would have sunk a lot of money into this game, especially because it's been out for 4 years at this point. Mm. You know, because you buy your heroes, or there's the in-game currency you can earn to. You know, it's free to play, so it's cool. But people would have sunk hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars into this game, and it really goes to show that, you know, when you're buying all these microtransactions and stuff, it can be taken away.
It's all digital, just like, man.
It's all digital. They, you know, you are purchasing the right to play that while they let you play that. You're purchasing the license for whatever you're purchasing.
Credit to Marvel, though. They're like, hey, these guys aren't keeping up with the shit.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Like, you know, that's quality control right there. They're like, hey, they're not doing what they said they would. Yeah. Done.
You know, it must have gotten to the point where it's not profitable anymore.
Like, I wouldn't say it's not profitable. I'd say if it's a free to play game, microtransactions. I know a lot of people sink a lot of money into it, as you said. I think it's more of a quality control thing.
Yeah, possibly.
As in, like, if it's brand. Like, by you guys not doing what you say you're doing, you're affecting us. You're affecting the Marvel brand. You're affecting the Disney brand.
And there are people you don't want to piss off.
Hell no.
Speaking of quality, though, The previously announced DLC packs for Wolfenstein 2 The New Colossus have received release dates. Bethesda announced the first of the three DLC packs will release in December, with the final pack releasing in March. Players who pre-ordered Wolfenstein 2 have already received Episode 0 as a bonus, mm-hmm. but players who didn't pre-order it can get a part of a season pass. Episode 0 introduces players to the characters they will play in each DLC pack, fighting for freedom in the Nazi-occupied American territories. Bethesda and Machine Games will release the first DLC pack, The Adventures of Gunslinger Joe, on December 14th. Players will take control of Joseph Stallion, a former NFL quarterback who fights back against Nazi menace from Chicago to space. Second pack, The Diaries of Agent Silent Death, releases January 30 and will focus on the exploits of ex-OSS agent Jessica Valiant, an assassin who will fight the Nazi war machine in California to uncover the secrets of Operation San Andreas. And finally, the last DLC pack, The Amazing Deeds of Captain Wilkins, comes out in March of 2018 and focuses on US Army hero Captain Gerald Wilkins, who travels to Alaska to stop Nazi Operation Black Sun. How did that tickle you?
Yep.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Like, is it even if I don't never play them, I'm gonna buy that season pass because, like, I think Machine Games deserve my money.
Yeah, they
period.
Do. And if anything, they deserve money simply for the titling of these DLCs.
Like, what's inside to
The Adventures of Gunslinger Joe, The Diaries of Agent Silent Death, and The Amazing Deeds of Captain Williams. They all sound fucking rad. Just by name, I'm like, I'm interested.
Like, I want to play them.
I want to play that.
Like, but literally, like, you know, we were very lucky, and yeah, so the Bethesda Australian team sent us the game, so we haven't given them money. We gave them nothing but praise, but yeah. I think that would be my way of paying back, I think.
Yeah,
season, get them that season pass.
Yeah. Well, we are heading into a fair bit of downtime in the coming 2 months-ish.
Mm.
So hopefully we have time to catch up and all that. And Wolfenstein 2 being one of them.
Yeah, on that, Last of Us, finally.
Yeah.
Horizon, yeah, maybe. Finally.
Persona 5?
No, it's... No. Persona 5 is difficult because I look at it, I'm like, that's like hundreds of hours I don't have.
About 100.
Yeah, but looking at it, though, it's, like, daunting. Where, like, Last of Us, I'm like, oh, it's about 15 hours, I can get through that. Or,
you know, it's only 10-hour days.
Yeah, Wolfenstein, I'm like, yeah, it's about 12 hours, 15, I can do that as well. I'm took a big hunk out of it already. And we'll see how we go. Who's talking to me?
Second to last bit of news, as Ryan throws shit everywhere. As Star Wars Battlefront 2 launches, the ability to purchase crystals, the sequel's in-game currency for microtransactions, is currently unavailable for players, and EA has confirmed that it has pulled microtransactions from the game temporarily. That's the important word. Quote, returning off all in-game purchases, DICE GM Oscar Gabrielson's statement reads, we will now spend more time listening, adjusting, balancing, and tuning. This means that the option to purchase crystals in-game is currently offline, and all progression will be earned through gameplay. The ability to purchase crystals in-game will become available at a later date. Only after we've made changes to the game, we'll share more details as we work through this. Now, that this game this week, fucking Jesus.
Yeah, man.
EA is now the proud owner of the most downvoted comment on Reddit of all time. Not an easy feat.
Ugh.
It's at about -700,000 downvotes. And the next closest, like, Reddit's a big thing. The next closest is like fucking 10K, I think. What are you doing?
Getting that window open, getting some circulated air in here. I'm getting all stuffy.
Oh, okay. Hopefully they don't fuck with the lighting too much. And yeah, I mean, they did a AMA on Wednesday of Thursday for us on Reddit, and that was just a fucking train wreck. That thing got pulled apart hard. Unfortunately, apparently one of the guys in the AMA from DICE, he's only been there for a couple of months, and they've just fucking thrown him in the deep end, you know, go fix this shit, and you can't. So EA statement was like, you know, we're listening, and yeah.
You know what it sounds like? There was a time when Tony Abbott, our Prime Minister, was like, I've listened, I've learned, and I'll change.
And hasn't.
Didn't do none of that.
Didn't do anything, yeah. So, you know, there's a lot going on with the game, and EA statement was like, you know, we're listening, and yeah. So they reduced, because the initial thing was Vader and Luke cost 60,000 in-game currency, and people worked out, you know, the average rate of earning currency be about 40 hours to unlock one character. And then in the arcade mode, where you can keep playing modes to get currency, has a cap on how much you can earn per day, which then unlocks after a couple of hours.
Free-to-play model.
The exact free-to-play model. And it's, you know, it's been getting chewed out. I think Game Informer gave it a 6.5, mainly just because of all this shit, yeah? And it makes me feel bad for the people behind the scenes that just worked on the assets and made the game, because the game looks fucking amazing. Like, it looks graphically stunning. I'm sure it's super fun to play, but it's all being overshadowed by all this. The important thing is temporarily, yeah? So is it for the better, or are they using that to get the sales up before Christmas and then be like, okay, we're putting back in now? You know, it seems dodgy.
It's entirely business. There is no consumer focus behind this in the slightest.
Having said all of that, it is the top selling game on the Xbox Store and PC.
Yeah, because people like Star Wars.
People like Star Wars.
I fucking love Star Wars. I want to play this game so bad. Mm. But I, you know, once have taken a genuine stance. I'm like, no, fuck you.
No, fuck you. That's my stance. Like, but yeah, I get it.
Yeah, it's like I myself. Like, normally, I cave pretty quickly. I cave with Shadow of War pretty quick because it looked cool. And like, this game looks so good. I fucking love Star Wars with like almost every part of my being. And I want to see this single player story. I want to see Shiva in the Inferno Squad kicking butt.
What I would have loved to see is EA had this opportunity here with, you know, everything they've put in the game. You know, this free-to-play model, they had the opportunity to be like the first AAA developer to go, we're releasing this game free.
Yeah.
And none of this would have happened because it's all, you know, it's a free game, free-to-play game. It's modeled after free-to-play. You got the microtransactions and the in-game currencies and all that. And everyone was like, well, it's fucking free. So sweet. Of course, they're not going to do that because that's not what AAA publishers do. But it really could have been a massive turning point for the industry if EA kind of did this. But obviously, they're not going to.
Regardless of whether they did that or not, this is a turning point for the industry. This is a perfect example of microtransactions at their
going too far.
At their most vicious. Right? So for years, everyone's been spewing the hyperbole of microtransactions and what they mean and where they're going to end up. And EA has finally been... They've finally pushed that
found
line.
Found that line. Because it's gotten worse through the year, you know, with Assassin's Creed, and even Horizon had some, but you couldn't buy them. But they did have...
loot crates.
Loot crates and stuff. You know, and everyone credits Overwatch for starting it, yeah? Mm. But they didn't, really. I mean, the crates have been in Steam, Valve for Counter-Strike and Team Fortress 2. You know, they really started the whole loot box thing. But yeah, they were very clearly this year heading to the line, and EA didn't just find the line, they fucking tripped over it.
Mm. And now they're backpedaling because no one's, you know, and not as many people are buying the game. Yeah. I wouldn't say no one, because people are.
Of course it's going to be the top-selling game, but I'm sure it's not meeting up to their projections that they had slated for it. So,
And think about this is entirely bad. Like, in terms of PR, it's horrendous. It baffles me that, like, LucasArts or Lucasfilm or Disney have not come over going,
What the fuck? Fix this shit. Well, maybe they have, and that's why they're backpedaling. But the key word is temporarily. So, while it seems on the surface like good PR, it's just corporate speak at the moment. What the fuck
something
are you
went
doing?
Right my nose and fucking come breathe.
Yes, corporate speak for now. We'll have to wait and see. You know, this could be the turning point for EA where they could spin out like Microsoft have been trying to do from the horrible Xbox One launch.
Well, yeah, Jason Schreier made the reference because rumor has it EA backs them on Xbox.
So, you know, it could be a good turning point for EA where they do get a lot of customer loyalty back, but I don't think it will be.
I think they have gone on the... EA have always... You know, they've been consistently the most hated company for a very long time.
They got
time.
Voted like, for it, didn't they?
Yeah.
Most hated company
for
in 2015?
Like 5 years in a row or something. Not that many. But it's noticeable. So they're already in a shitty place and they've just been like, well, they've doubled down on being shitty.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, it's like a supervillain. It's like, well, I'm already a villain, so fuck it. Let's make it worse.
See how bad I can go. And I do feel bad for the guys at DICE.
Literally.
But so far, all the hate I've seen is primarily aimed at EA. Not a lot of DICE guys are getting pulled into it. because we know, I think Jim Sterling did a video on Deus Ex, whatever the latest one was. So, and he's a friend
Mankind
with a developer.
Mankind Divided.
He's a friend with a developer who doesn't work there anymore. And that developer who worked on the game said we were 2 weeks from launch and Square came in and said put all these microtransactions in the game. So the same thing could have happened at DICE with EA.
I promise you the same thing's happened here.
DICE don't deserve any of this hate. They've made a stunning looking game. I'm sure the game is heaps of fun and I'm sure they worked super fucking hard on it, and it's just EA pulling the corporate strings from behind.
See, what I think will happen here is one of the things that EA were touting come E3 last year or this year. Oh, there was this year when they've gone, Battlefront 2 will not have a season pass. Everyone's gone, not knowing that that means
what all this shit.
You know, like, that's the thing. Everyone's like, season passes aren't that bad, and they're like, ah, but you didn't want them.
Yep. So we'll make up the money in other ways.
So what I find really interesting as well, because there's something they also mentioned in the article. So they originally have dialed back how much things are worth in the game in terms of currency. Like Vader, they dialed back.
Dial back how much currency you can earn.
Yeah, so by at the end of the campaign, you would get a bump, right? You would get, here's 20,000 in-game currency for finishing the campaign. Mm. That's now 5.
Yeah.
Like, they've dialed that back by 75%. Yeah. They've also downed Vader by 75%. So,
but they've also downed how much currency you can earn in a certain amount of time.
Yeah, the overall image is like, it's less. Like, uh-huh. See, often I get super cynical about games and
yeah, me too.
And why we're in it, and like not to like why we're in it, like, but why the industry is the way that it is.
Yeah.
And it hurts me.
Yeah.
And all this EA stuff is one of those moments.
Having said that, it has been a fascinating week just to watch all this unfold and to read about what's going on and stuff. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what's going to happen with that in the next few months. Because I'm not the biggest Star Wars fan, but from the trailers I watched of the game, I'm like, this looks rad, and I can see myself having fun with this. Maybe when it's $30 in pre-owned or some shit. So maybe.
I'm sure you'll find some pre-owned copies. Pretty easy.
7th and final bit of news for the week: top selling games for week ending 12th of November 2017 are out. Starting number 10, Wolfenstein 2. Number 9, Crash the Insane Trilogy. Number 8, GTA 5. Number 7, NBA 2K18. Number 6, Sonic Forces. Number 5, FIFA 18. Number 4, GT Sport. Number 3, Arse Origins. Number 2, Need for Speed Payback. And number 1, Call of Duty World War 2.
Another game that's listed with microtransactions is Need for Speed Payback.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, like real bad.
Like Forts are bad? There's a lot of...
Things worse than Forts, actually.
Jesus Christ.
Sonic Forces is up there. That's interesting.
Yeah, apparently it's hot trash.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. That's why it's interesting.
Yeah, but no one knew it was hot trash until they bought it and played it.
Crash,
still hanging in there. It was 10th last week. It's 9th this week.
Yeah, so Wolfenstein did a big drop, huh?
Yeah, it did.
I guess big week one sales.
Mm. Yeah, Wolfenstein is the kind of game that I don't think has that long after sales. Everyone knows if they want it, they buy it release week, yep. And then
you might get a bump later if it kind of drops down a bit in price.
Yeah,
I think it'll make the jump. But yeah, anyway, that's all the news this week. So that brings us into our main topic, which we still don't have a name for. It's called the main topic.
Yeah, this week we're going to Game of the Year award nominees were announced earlier this week. I want to talk about that because there's a few little things I take personal gripe in, but that just might be me being a cynical asshole.
Could be.
Okay. So I reached out to the community, as I normally do, should have been yesterday, but I only did it a couple of hours before we recorded, just to get some people's responses on what they want to win. So let's go through some of the categories and talk about them. Starting with the biggest category, the Game of the Year nominations. So we've got 5. Number 1 is Horizon Zero Dawn. Number 2 is Persona 5. Number 3, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. Number 4, Super Mario Odyssey. And number 5, Legend of Zelda, Breath of the Wild. Solid candidates. Sweet seeing Nintendo having 2 in the top 5. That's fucking rad. Mm. And I think we said on the other show, Kirsty from Nintendo said that it's first year ever that a major Mario and Zelda title have released. And there's no real argument if they were going to be in the top 5 nominators. My gripe. Now this, you feel free to counter me
no,
on this.
No, I'll let you go and then I'll jump in. So that way we're not cutting over on each other.
I don't believe that PUBG should be nominated. Now I understand the reach that it has. I understand what it has done for the industry and all that. I totally get it. Never played it, but I totally get it. But it's in early access. Now over the years, the lines of early access to release have become... There's no real bridge there anymore. They'll just flick of a button. It's live now, which it is live next month, in about a month, apparently. It's going to be fully released in December. But I don't know. I don't think an early access game should be in there. But it is in that weird situation where it is early access for, the whole year. It's released at the end of the year. So if we don't put it in there, it can't be in next year's because it's released this year. You know what I'm getting at? So it's in that weird middle ground. Like, it can't be nominated for Game of the Year 2018 if it's been... if we nominate it for Game of the Year 2017.
Correct.
So it's kind of its only chance to achieve that as well. But I know, it's in early access. The game is not finished. What the PUBG that releases next month, they might fuck it. We don't know. The game's not released, so it hasn't been scored properly yet. So yeah, when it comes out next month, it could be hot trash. They could fuck it all up. and it could be the worst game of 2017. I'm not saying it will be, but we don't know because it's not out and it hasn't been rated yet officially. That's my gripe. How do you feel about that?
I just find it very funny that you're like, you are so against like ratings and scores. Like, it hasn't been scored. That's the problem. Like, no.
It is though. It is the problem because that's how.
I just funny how it's the very just, opposite stance of scores.
No, it's just how as long as game of the, you know, as long as this has been a thing, you know, the game, it's generally rated off scores of the games. All these games are rated, you know, 95 plus or 90 plus or whatever on Metacritic or however you want to look at it. And this game hasn't been officially rated. Not just rated scores, but there are no official reviews of the full game done yet because the full, quote-unquote, game is not out yet. Someone from the community agrees. Zach Jackson from the community agrees with me. No early access
game
should be... No, early access game should not be game of the year. Go.
I agree.
Okay. Next topic then.
No, it's pretty straightforward. So, like, I understand, like you said, I'm in the same boat as you. I love PUBG. It's a great drop-in, drop-out game. No game has matched the fucking fury of this in terms of a community. It has, like, 10... million? That's more than 10 million. It had 10 million active players. They've sold 20 or 30 million copies or something. It's insane, fucking insane. Right? And that's only going to get bigger when it hits Xbox. Mm. So
and
I
eventually
think,
PlayStation.
I think the nod comes from its impact that it's had. Will it win? No. There is no way that'll win. No one will let that win. But what they're doing is they're giving it the appreciation that it deserves. Mm. They've gone, look, you have done something that no one else has done. Congratulations.
But what game has missed out on that spot because they've given PUBG a little nod?
Yeah, fine. Then, like, no, you've hit the big ones there. The big ones, like, period. Like, when I was thinking of what my top games would be or what I think, you know, especially like people in the industry would think, my brain was Odyssey, Zelda, and Horizon. I did not put Persona on that list by any imagination. Not because it's a bad game, just simply because I didn't think it would be on that same scope.
I want to talk about Persona a little bit after we finish talking about PUBG.
So I think PUBG's in there purely because they're like, you've done something impressive. Like Pokemon Go. Pokemon Go, when it was got in there last year and it won Best Mobile Game, that game was fucking broken.
Yeah, it was.
That's server issues.
All, I get your point. Look at what it did for
but
the
whole point of it was looking at what it has done for gaming. Mm. What has it done for the industry?
Yeah, I get it. I mean, this is nothing against PUBG. Like, I totally understand.
It's like
why
when Cate Blanchett gets another fucking Oscar nom for some reason. Yeah, she's like, not Cate Blanchett. What's the other one?
I don't know. This is your
the other analogy. Old the other old blonde chick. Not Judi Dench. Not Cate Blanchett. She's in fucking everything. She was in Mamma Mia. Her name's gone right out of my brain. She's an incredible actress.
Can't be that good if you don't remember her name.
No, it's only because I can't remember her name. She's super well good. She's fucking fantastic. I don't know.
Meryl Streep.
That's it. Hey! That's exactly the one. Yeah, so Meryl Streep's always nominated every year for Best Actress. You know why? Because she's fucking good. Yeah. But they've got to a point where you're like, you can be in like a commercial for Dove soap and you're going to be in there because you're so good. And like, because of what she's done to the, you know.
Now it's worth noting that while you can vote on all of these, all the votes from gamers will only make up about 10%.
Yeah, but the rest are done by select judging.
So if it did come to gamers, purely, PUBG might actually take it. Mm. But that's not how this all actually works.
No, that's not how it works.
Now, on Persona 5, the reason I believe Persona 5 to be on there is, you know, we haven't had, you know, JRPGs so big in the Western world for 20 years. Like, since the big years of Final Fantasy, Final Fantasy 7, 8, 9, 10. Since then, JRPGs just haven't had that kind of impact in the Western world. And with the notoriety that Persona 4 got, and more lately after that, Persona 4 Golden on the Vita, Persona 5 really kind of just exploded back into this side of the world. Like JRPGs haven't for so long, and it's gained such notoriety from people who don't normally play these kind of games and whatnot, that I just believe it's there because of the impact that it's had for that genre of games in this side of the world.
Yeah, so it's the same vein sort of nod as the PUBG got.
Yeah, I would love for it to win because it is so far my game of the year. Shut up. But it won't. Legend of Zelda will win. I'm quite sure. I'm calling it now.
Zelda has got it. Like, Horizon Zero Dawn is fucking fantastic. I had gripes, personal gripes with Legend of Zelda. Yeah. But once again, looking at it, it has fundamentally changed how A, Zelda is done, B, how an open world can be done. Mm. And like, you know, it's just, it was fantastic.
Should other people from the community agree with the, oh, I'll shut the door in a sec. With the
you
statement.
You don't want to do it now, it's going to keep banging. Oh. I'll read that. So, Dave Chataway jumped in and said, Zelda all the way, completely changed the formula and launched the Switch to its current success. And Buddy Watson from Review Culture said, Zelda in a canter.
So, yeah, it's also another reason is that it will be heavily attributed to the Switch's success. You know, such a strong launch title that, you know, let's say we're in a world where the Switch launched and Zelda was delayed for a couple of months. Would the Switch be where it is today? Maybe not. I don't think so, because it was over 100% attach rate for Zelda to the Switch, like for the first month or so.
Side conversation. Because it's not on the Wii U. Because those two games they launched with, so it had no choice. Mm. Nintendo have consistently released a strong first party title every month since it's released. Literally.
Quote unquote strong.
No. Literally. No.
First party titles, yes. Strong, no. Arms fucking flop. Arms, hard.
No, it sold incredibly well.
Who's still playing it though?
Oh, yep. Yeah.
Guarantee you nobody. Same with Splatoon 2. There's a big market for the esports.
There's a very diehard community.
Fans. Yes.
See, the thing is, this is the same thing. So this is my issue with Persona. You've seen Persona blow up because in our echo chamber, it's very popular. We're not in that area for Splatoon. Hmm. So as far as we know, Splatoon died in the butt. Very unlikely. I imagine there are hundreds of thousands of people still playing Splatoon 2.
100,000 is a bit of a stretch.
I doubt it. I think you're right.
Less than 100,000.
Not a chance.
Guaranteed.
Not a chance.
Guaranteed. Prove us wrong. Tell us.
But I think there's a lot of people still playing Splatoon.
Yeah, a lot of people.
You know, and then you keep moving on down. You got like Mario Kart, and like they've had an incredible year.
I don't want to discount that.
But yes, I said that. Like Horizon Zero Dawn, I think was fantastic for like the
Horizon
30 hours I put in it.
Deserves it to be up there, especially with the expansion that released last week, which you can find our review of, called. Well, the perfect expansion. That's what we call the video. But Horizon wasn't just a great game. It was a revitalization for a major studio who was having trouble towards the launch of this, you know, because Guerrilla Games did Killzone Shadowfall.
The Killzone, period.
They did all Killzone, but the last big game they did was Killzone Shadowfall, the launch title on PS4, and it was okay.
It was visually stunning.
Visually stunning, but everything else was... you know, they tried to bring a bit more open worldiness into it because it was very linear. Killzone 1, 2, and 3 was very traditional shooter campaign. And it was good. It was okay. But what that led to with Horizon Zero Dawn has put them way back to the top of the echelon in Sony first-party studios. Probably only behind Naughty Dog at this point, especially this year. Horizon represents for Guerrilla, you know, a return to greatness and the big mainstream appeal. And, you know... because of the style of game Horizon is, it appeals to a wider range of people. I think, you know, a lot of people look at a shooter and go, I don't play shooters, I don't, you know. But Horizon being the open world thing, which, you know, 90% of the games are this year.
It's one of those things, you look at it, it's open world, you are intrigued by these giant robo dinosaurs, you're intrigued by a strong female lead, you know, you're in, like...
And it has a very, very strong story. Not amazing, but the story itself is very, very...
So, I mean, even from the general populace, they look at that and they see it and they go, I want to play that. Because it looks fantastic. Like, the trailer, because, like, all these different parts brought together make an incredible setup.
Yep. Yeah, and, you know, obviously the... A big new mascot for PlayStation as well.
So we'll be having our sort of best game of the year thing in some, probably in the next couple of weeks. Yeah. I've got to actually sit down and, like, we've played so many games.
I've been keeping a list.
I started keeping a list at the start of the year. And then I got out of my hands really quickly.
Yeah.
We played a lot of games
before
this year.
Christmas we'll have that video up, I think. Yeah. Because we're at the point now where, other than Xenoblade Chronicles, which I'm hoping to get, there's nothing else coming this year that I would even consider close to being Game of the Year. So yeah. We'll go through not all the categories, they're fucking heaps, but a few more of the major ones.
One of the ones I want to mention is Best Narrative, with Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice being on there.
Yeah, so that's
Ninja Theory have done.
And I'll put in what that's up against, just to show how you know, incredible this is. So you've got Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice, Horizon Zero Dawn, Nier, Automata, What Remains of Edith Finch, Edith Finch, and Wolfenstein 2, The New Colossus. So it's up there with fucking big hitters.
Man. Yeah, having Wolf in there with its story makes perfect sense.
And Nier, it's actually fantastic. I need to play Nier before Game of the Year.
I think Nier will probably come in your top five.
I'm so sure it will be in probably my top three, And I've been waiting it so patiently for a good sale on it, and there just never is. I'm going to have to just bite the bullet and buy it.
And then bring it over here and we'll play it together. Yeah.
It looks fucking rad, and it that it's escaped me this long is a travesty. And Hellblade as well, because you played Hellblade and you really, really, really liked
it. I really dug it.
And I'd imagine it's in your top five of the year as well.
Yeah, in terms of narrative, fuck yeah. Hellblade achieved so many different things. It was a independent studio making what they refer to as a AAA quality game, which means high fidelity. Just, it's fucking fantastic.
And how much was it, right?
$30.
Fucking insane.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
And like, not $30 US. It's $30, I think, at the moment, $35.
I think it's $34.95.
It's like stupidly low cost. So, like, the idea of what they're going for is fantastic. There is some sensational technology behind it. And the whole idea that Senua is slowly creeping into madness with her different voices and her paranoia and her schizophrenia, that sort of stuff. It's the audio design in that game is brilliant. If they're not in some sort of category for audio design, they're going to fucking win it.
No, they are.
Good.
They're in a total of five of the major categories.
Yeah.
And that's incredible.
And which they should be, because that game is stunning. It's fantastic.
It's also up for best audio design.
Good.
Best performance.
Yes, Melina.
Melina Jurgens.
Melina Jurgens. So I'm sure that this is common knowledge at this point, but she was originally just part of the Ninja Theory team. She was the social media and content creator. So what she would do is she would make all the videos sort of like behind the scenes, put them on the YouTube and sort of like, hey, this is what we're doing. And they're like, hey, we're trying to find an actress. Do you mind being the... Because what... The technology that Ninja Theory brought in was this sort of in-game... live in-game motion capture. So they had a camera that would run into their engine and it would deal in real time.
That's wicked.
So they actually presented it on stage. So they had her standing on stage, they had the cameras around her, and they heard her act out a scene, and it came on the screen in the game in full... And like...
Is there a YouTube video on this?
Like, yes.
Okay, I'm going to watch it.
Okay, so they had her come in. They're like, hey, do you mind just being the part while we find the actress? Eventually, they find out that Melina is fucking fantastic. And they're like, can you please just keep doing this?
Yeah.
So like, if you watch the behind the scenes of Hellblade and you sort of see her fall into that role and... Oh, she seems like such a lovely person as well. And
Hellblade's
like,
also up for Games for Impact.
Oh, yeah.
And Best Independent Game as well.
Yeah.
So fucking good.
Easy. In terms of the impact of, like, as an intimate impact of the games industry, it's shined an incredible light on mental health and mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
And what they've done is, you know, there was like a week or so where any sale went straight through to mental health research.
Yep.
So, hell yeah.
A couple more categories. Best Art Direction. We got Cuphead, Destiny 2, Horizon Zero Dawn, Persona 5, and Breath of the Wild. That's a tough one to pick, I reckon.
It's a tough one. I think Cuphead's in with a damn good chance. Destiny 2, get the fuck out of there. Horizon Zero Dawn, yeah.
Persona 5.
Hell yeah, Persona 5
Even if you didn't like the game, the art direction was fucking stunning.
Persona 5 has such a charm. Even its menus were charming as hell.
It's just real snazzy, yeah?
And Legend of Zelda is very... I don't think that game is very, very visually stunning. I think it's very mechanically.
It had a very consistent art direction. It was very nice looking, but...
Yeah, it's very, very mechanically strong in terms of all its little systems, but visually and its art design, I wouldn't put it there.
Last one I'll go is best score and music. Oh, we'll go best audio design. Best score and music. Cuphead, Destiny 2, Nier Automata, Persona 5, Super Mario Odyssey, and The Legend of Zelda again.
The Legends of Zelda didn't really have much music.
I'm upset. Maybe I didn't play far enough, but at no point in the game did they do the traditional Zelda theme. The dun, 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 dun. They never did it.
Odyssey has a good little up thing to it. Cuphead
Odyssey
is
very
great.
Ambient music, I think, more than anything. There's no tunes, because I've put in probably 30, 40 hours at this point. There's no tune in Odyssey that I'm like singing in my head. You know, it's, nothing sticks with me. Persona 5, I've got the whole soundtrack. I fucking adore that soundtrack.
You're like hard for that game.
Yeah, but I'm hard for that game because it ticks so many, like, style, music, gameplay. Because that's why I'm hard for it, because it does tick all these boxes.
I think it's in with a good chance for best
Destiny
2
had some pretty sick music in it. Some very cool music, actually. But I'd say it's between Cuphead and Persona. And maybe Nier. I haven't played Nier, but I've also heard that soundtrack is fantastic too. And best audio design, last one I'll talk about, Destiny 2, Hellblade, Resident Evil 7, Mario and Zelda. A lot of Mario and Zelda are doubling up in a lot of these categories.
Yeah, it's audio design, no. For them, like the answer
it has to be Hellblade.
It has to be.
Surely, because of what they did.
Yeah.
You can explain it better than
so
I can.
So what they've done is, in order to demonstrate her, to Senua's, like, break into crazy and going into her psychosis, they've actually set up a room where they built a microphone with a particular casing, and they build prosthetic ears into the casing as well. Mm. So that way it mimics your ears in terms of how it registers sound. So they would have actors and actresses wander around and do
speak,
you know,
you're fucked.
Yeah, they come, they'd whisper in the ear and be like, hey, what's going on? You know what I mean? Like,
hey man, do you want some pineapple on your head? You want to get pizza tonight? You want some good weed?
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's like, so they've got that. So having playing with the headphones on and 3D sounding, getting that nice spatial audio, nothing compares to it.
It sounds like it'd be really fucking scary.
Oh, dude, it is unnerving.
Yeah.
Because someone be like, while you're trying to trudge forward and do what you need, it's like, it's giving, it's, it adds all those voices of doubt that you normally have as a regular person. It's like, you can't do this.
Yeah. You fucking suck.
It's fucking crazy with you. And they're like, yeah. And another voice will come over here and be like, yeah, what the fuck are you guys doing? Yeah. You mean, like, it's so good. And it makes you feel crazy.
Having said that, Destiny 2 at its best is fucking incredible. Like, with my headphones on, yeah, there are points where I'm doing a strike. One in particular, Pyramidion, is a Vex themed strike. Visually, it's fucking incredible, but the ambience and the background music and how your bullets echo, because it's quite open, your bullets echoing off, like, Destiny 2 has its moments where it is fucking amazing.
Yeah, but what about moments here?
But Hellblade, from what I hear, the whole game is like that.
Yeah. So Resident Evil 7, glad that's in there as well.
Mm. Resident Evil 7 got a fair few nods from a few different categories too. One more, actually. Best performance I want to talk about. We've got Ashley Birch as Aloy in Horizon Zero Dawn, Brian Bloom, Wolfenstein 2 The New Colossus, as BJ Blazkowicz, Claudia Black, Uncharted The Lost Legacy, as Chloe, Laura Bailey, Uncharted The Lost Legacy, as Nadine, and Melina Jurgens, again, Hellblade as Senua.
Ashley Birch did pretty good.
She did pretty good. What took away from Aloy in Horizon for me was a lot of the cutscenes were very kind of robotic, stilted. Her voice acting in it was fucking incredible, and it was great, you know, very emotional and powerful, but it was the visuals paired with that didn't make it quite match up for me.
BJ, Brian Bloom, BJ's great. He's also very low key and very chill. But, like, to his credit, in terms of where the story is, the amount of emotion they put behind him, like, although he feels and he has a history of being a real one-note character, like Wolfenstein, BJ, a mindless shooter character, and where they've taken that character and the emotional power they've given behind him is really impressive, to sort of, like, you know, and just in the way he delivers, like, because he always speaks really kind of slow and deep, but like the little twist on how he says certain things is really powerful. Claudia Black,
both the lead females from
Uncharted, Claudia Black fucking killed it.
Yep.
As Chloe, she's pretty much playing herself though, so it makes sense. Laura Bailey, fantastic. I didn't think Nadine was a strong enough character to be on there, but
I
it makes sense.
I love Laura Bailey though. But everything Laura Bailey does.
Oh, Laura Bailey's fantastic. So, but again? I think Melina has it. I think Melina has it.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah. I hope that Hellblade takes a lot of these categories, because not only does Ninja Theory deserve that kind of recognition, but it also starts to set a new precedent for AAA in the AAA gaming space, and to show that an independent company can pull this off and sell it for less than half the price of what our regular games
do. A quick scroll down and then we wrap things up.
Games for Impact, best ongoing game.
Also, best games as service. GTA Online has that in a heartbeat.
I see. I wouldn't mind if PUBG took that one out. It is nominated. Best Indie Game, Cuphead, Hellblade, Night in the Woods, Pyre, What Remains of Edith Finch.
Hellblade.
I do want to get to Pyre at some point. Best Mobile Game, I don't give a fuck. Now, this is interesting. Best Handheld Game, and they're not counting Switch games in that.
Well, I guess that's probably a deal with Nintendo. They're like, no, we consider it a console.
So Best Handheld Game, they're all Nintendo games, all for 3DS. But yeah, so no... Because if... I guess 3DS needs a category for its games. Because if it was up against... the Switch itself, no 3DS games would make it in there, I don't think. Not at this point, anyway. No. Best VR games, you might be able to get in on this.
Okay, here we go.
Farpoint, Lone Echo, Resident Evil 7, Star Trek Bridge Crew, and Superhot.
Superhot's fantastic, but the answer to that is Resident Evil. Simply because it is the first, it was the, literally the first fully fledged game in VR.
Yep.
Given.
Best, then we get into the subcategories, best action game, action adventure,
role-playing, wank.
South Park's up for best RPG.
Fuck yeah,
up against Persona, Nier, Final Fantasy, and Divinity Original Sin 2.
I think Nier might have that.
Best family game, all Nintendo. Mario Kart 8, Mario Rabbids. What?
Oh, sorry, I was looking at fighting game. My apologies.
My best family game, Mario Kart 8, Mario Rabbids, Sonic Mania, Splatoon 2.
I want Rabbids to take that out. It won't. I think Odyssey will take it.
Kart might take it. Odyssey is not much of a family. Like, you can have two players, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not really a get the family involved kind of
thing. I said, I would like Rabbids. I think that would be a great sort of oomph from when it was Poops. Everyone was like, ooh, this is Poops' idea. And then it turned out to be really damn good.
Most anticipated game. God of War, Spider-Man, Monster Hunter World, Red Dead 2, and The Last of Us Part 2. That's all right, a hard one.
I have an issue with that.
Oh, yeah?
Because I believe with most anticipated game, it should be something that's coming out within the next 12 months.
Maybe
that's what I believe. That's what I believe it should be. Last of Us is not coming out in the next 12 months. Red Dead, like Monster Hunter, we know is coming out in January. God of War, we still think still early next year. We've got Spider Man coming out next year. Last of Us is so fucking far out. I don't think it should be on that list. Yes, people are really hyped for it. People are really hyped for Death Stranding too. You know what I mean? It's like it shouldn't be on that list.
Yeah, fair call.
In terms of trending gamer, might I add, I'm just going to quickly mention this.
I don't know any of them.
Guy Beam, Dr. Disrespect. I know one of them. Dr. Disrespect has been blowing up my Facebook recently.
I've seen clips of him on Reddit recently. And he's so good. I saw one clip. This was on Reddit. He's playing PUBG as he does. And he's with another player he's never met before. He's live streaming. And the other player goes, are you Dr. Disrespect? He's like, nah, man. He's like, oh, you really sound like him.
Fan.
He's like, no, I'm a fan. No, what do you think of him? And the other guy's like, I fucking love him, man. Like, he's helped me through so much shit. I really, really love this guy. And he took off his headset and he started fucking crying.
Yeah.
Like, Dr. Disrespect started crying and I was like, fuck.
Because he has such a tough persona, his character, and then something broke him a little bit.
Every now and then,
yeah,
it shines through a little bit.
See, like, what I'm seeing, I think it's an ad for, like, a Dell product.
Yeah.
So he's on a boat. He's like, ah!
Well, because he's got
his headset, he's got a wig, and he's hauling ass in his boat. He's like, ah!
But he's been Dr. Disrespect, I think, for nearly a decade now in various different things.
Like, I knew him from watching Tim the Tatman. You know, he appears in his little tier 3 sub. Like, he does the little dance with him.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I'm curious on who this guy is. And I sort of fell down a hole and I went down that way as well.
Best debut indie game, probably the last category because I'm getting with stuff. Let me go through it. We've got Cuphead, Golf Story, Hollow Knight, Mr. Shifty, and Slime Rancher. Now, I'm going to chuck in some points for Slime Rancher. So I've got that on Steam for my son because he really liked it. My son's at that point, he's got his favourite couple of YouTubers, you know, Jacksepticeye, Markiplier, DanTDM. Not us. I say don't watch us because we swear, and then you watch Markiplier for 3 hours and it's like, fucking this and in the balls. And I'm like, oh. But he put in a lot of time to Slime Rancher and it is a very, very, very chill game. Cool to see Golf Story. I haven't played it yet. But I know you're a fan of Golf Story.
Golf Story is great. I enjoyed it a lot. Very, like, Hollow Knight, Team Cherry, which are an Australian team.
I am super keen for Hollow Knight, but I'm waiting for the Switch. I want it on the Switch because it's the exact kind of game I'd love to play on the Switch. We did play it originally at PAX 2015, and I was interested. I was like, this looks sick. It was good.
I bought it when it came, like, when I realized that it was out. I was like, oh shit, and I bought it, and then my PC was too pooped at the time.
They have confirmed it is coming to the Switch. I'm just being patient
for yes, but I think Cuphead will win that one, although all of those
deserve
it. So, like, Mr. Shifty is an interesting one because, you know, I've heard good things, but not a lot, like, not the same zeitgeist that Cuphead, Golf Story and Hollow Knight have had.
I think Cuphead will take it though, just in terms of how much you hear about it compared to the other games. But that's it.
So I haven't
done my vote official votes yet, but I definitely will.
Yeah, I didn't want to because I wanted to use my Facebook page. I was like, no, thank you.
But I think if you do it on your PC, you don't have to do that.
Cool.
There's a way to bypass.
Sweet. So, what do you think of the Game Awards nominees? We bullshitted about it for a while.
More importantly, sorry to cut you off, I want to know what you guys think about PUBG being nominated for Game of the Year. Should it be? Should it not be? Why? Why not? Am I just a fucking asshole? Or, you know, please let me know.
You know, I think he's a bit of a fucking asshole. Most games don't don't ship completed these days anyway. So
whoa, shots fired. Oh my god.
What? it's all by different title. Speaking of title, we have a segment called Coming to the Players where we say, hey, these games are coming to you. That was lame.
Never said that before in your life, but yeah. Not in that way.
No, never mind.
Smallest drop we've ever had, I believe, which thank God.
God, I'm getting tired.
Five titles coming out.
Seven. I think seven.
Oh, seven with the two.
Wait.
You can tack them on at the end.
Eight titles.
Axiom Verge, PS4, PS Vita, the retail version. I want to get that on the Switch somewhere. Battle of the Bulge.
Oh, I know that game.
PS4 digital. Monster of the Deep, Final Fantasy 15, PSVR Fishing.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. That's out next week. That could be fun. Planet of the Apes, Lost Frontier for PS4 digital. The actual release, not good. When it was accidentally put on the store a few weeks ago. And Rec Room for PSVR.
So two VR games.
Two VR games. And Final Fantasy 15 Fishing, I think, will be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Depending on what the price to that. But there are more games coming.
And should also mention here in Australia, on the 22nd of November, you'll have access to Hidden Agenda, Knowledge is Power, and SingStar Celebration, which are three of the PlayLink games. They have already been released in the US.
We did read them out on the prior that week.
We did because I emailed. I'm like, hey, I didn't know it was coming out this week. They're like, yeah, it's not. Mike, so thanks.
I'd imagine that was to do with the mobile.
I think it's actually to do with the mobile app side of things, which the apps are available right now. So we're going to. So thanks to PlayStation Australia that we received the code as of day of recording. We got it this last night. I have got them redeemed on the Pops account. We're going to get in there. We're going to probably stream it on Wednesday. We're going to get Dylan in.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do some Knowledge is Power. Yeah. Dylan's a fucking trivia man.
I had fun with Knowledge is Power.
Yeah. Dylan's a big trivia man. And played, I think having three of us is a good way. We might jump into Hidden Agenda.
Well, we did also play Hidden Agenda at PAX, but unfortunately it was so loud there you couldn't hear what the fuck was going on.
Yeah. So I think we'll do a little bit of Knowledge is Power to kick things off, and then we'll finish it off with a bit of Hidden Agenda. Having the three of us will be really good in sort of those split votes.
Mm-hmm.
I think an odd number is a good thing for
this game. Yeah, for sure.
But anyways.
That was the show. If you enjoyed it, catch every other For the Players every Monday morning at 9 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time on YouTube, iTunes and other podcast services. If you want to join in that conversation, head over to www.thepopculturist.com/questions. Give us your thoughts, questions and suggestions for the show. If a week between the shows is a little bit too long, join us on Facebook, join us on Discord, and if you're feeling generous, join us on Patreon. Head over there, check out the tiers. There might be something there that interests you.
I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Josh Saunders.
And that was a lot of energy, but that was also for the players.